VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we do thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today. Vaccinations are on the minds of many. I know that because I've seen the phone calls or the letters or the emails that have come to us. Many are making decisions on the COVID vaccine. Should I or should I not? This program is not about telling you what you should or should not do. Our guests will not be giving personalized medical advice. This is your personal decision. But we've also been told by some that their employer is mandating this vaccination. Do they have the authority to do that, ladies and gentlemen? Are the adverse effects of COVID vaccine being reported? So we're going to provide you information today on the COVID vaccine. We'll talk to you about efforts that are even underway to allow children as young as 11 years old to accept vaccinations without parental knowledge or consent, and even working behind parents' back. Well, joining me on these issues today, we welcome back Barbara Lowe Fisher. She is president of the National Vaccine Information Center. They're a nonprofit charity co-founded with parents of DPT vaccine-injured children in 1982. And so now, nearly four decades, she's led this national grassroots movement, public information campaign to institute vaccine safety reforms and inform consent protections to the public health system. She has researched, analyzed, publicly articulated the major issues involving the science, the policy, the law and ethics, politics of vaccination to become one of the world's leading non-medical consumer advocacy experts on the subject. She's co-author of DPT, A Shot in the Dark, and also has written the Consumer's Guide to Childhood Vaccines, Vaccines, Autism, and Chronic Inflammation, The New Epidemic, and Reforming Vaccine Policy and Law, A Guide. Barbara, good to have you back.
Oh, thank you. So much going on. It's really almost, you don't know where to begin.
Yeah, I'm going to begin in D.C. because I find what's going on there to be so egregious. The city of Washington, D.C., they passed through their city council this DC 23-171 that it's entitled the Minor Consent for Vaccinations Act of 2020. And Barbara, what we find in this legislation is appalling.
Well, it's extremely dangerous because what it does is basically say that any child as young as 11 years old can consent to vaccination after being convinced by a doctor that they should get one or more vaccines without the knowledge or consent of their parents. And in fact, it prohibits actually telling the parents what types of vaccines the child has been given. So it's really done in secrecy. And of course, this does not give the parent an ability to monitor the child after vaccination for signs and symptoms of a vaccine reaction, which can be very serious and fatal even. And it just disempowers parents from being able to be proper guardians of their children. And there are two resolutions. Right now, the fate of this bill, proposed law, is in the hands of the U.S. Congress. And there are some Congress in the House and the Senate. There are two resolutions, SJ Resolution 7 and HJ Resolution 25, which are pending. Congress has an ability to stop this, but unfortunately, you know, it's going to be an uphill climb in the present Congress, which is extremely pro-mandatory vaccination. So, but we'll see. If people go on to our advocacy portal at nvicadvocacy.org, they can read all about this bill. Yeah. And then if they register for the portal, it's free, they can then be put in contact with their federal representatives and make their voices heard.
You know, I'd like to delve a little further into this. We also had received, there's another group warning about this. It's the parentalrights.org. Mm-hmm. And just to echo what you said, yes, children as young as 11 to give binding consent to receive this. Even if parents have said, no, we're not going to take our child in, people can work with your children, instruct them, indoctrinate them, warn them, hey, you're going to die if you don't have this. But it would prohibit a provider from recording the shot in the child's medical record, require the provider to send the record only to the child's school, but prohibit the school from recording the vaccination in any record that the parents might see, and even prohibit the insurance carrier from sending an explanation of benefits listing the vaccination. I mean, this is really cutting parents out of the picture whatsoever. No parental consent, and they don't even want parents to have knowledge of it.
Well, right, and I mean, Congress passed the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act in 1986, and I was one of those parents who was working with Congress to try to make sure the companies would have at least some liability for vaccine injuries and deaths. At this point, after a Supreme Court decision in 2011, and after the eroding of that law, the gutting of that law by Congress, actually, over 30 years, the companies don't have any liability for vaccine injuries and deaths, and neither do doctors who give vaccines. So this is really shocking, a shocking turn of events.
Yes.
Because in that law, we got safety provisions. One of the most important was that doctors would have to give parents vaccine benefit and risk information, including a description of vaccine reactions, so they could monitor their children after vaccination. This is actually, if this passes, is in violation of federal law that was passed in 1986. So I don't understand why anyone would ever even consider this kind of dangerous legislation, which puts a child in physical danger.
What's amazing, folks, and just so you're in a clear understanding, according to the release, it will take effect on March 23rd unless, as Barbara pointed out, unless Congress passes this veto resolution within this period of time. That's House Joint Resolution 25, Senate Joint Resolution number 7. And again, because of the seriousness, I'm just going to provide you phone numbers to the Capitol switchboard where you can let your voice be heard on these matters. In the House, the number is 202-225-3121. That's 202-225-3121. The Senate is 202-224-3121. You can go to house.gov. You can go to senate.gov to get the specific phone numbers. Go to nvicadvocacy.org. That's the portal for the National Vaccine Information Center to get you informed on this, and links you to your legislators as well. But Barbara, what's so concerning about this is that unless Congress acts, this is going to become law in D.C. And isn't this not then the framework for other states to copycat this?
I think this is exactly what's happening with this bill, is that this is going to be a model for other states to adopt this kind of very aggressive and oppressive and really an assault on parental rights, this type of legislation. The idea for the vaccine lobbyists, for the pharmaceutical industry, for medical trade associations, and for government is that everyone in this country will have to get federally recommended vaccines, that any vaccine that the pharmaceutical companies produce and are licensed by the FDA and recommended by the CDC, including this COVID-19 vaccine, these experimental vaccines, that everyone will have to use them. That's where we're going in this country. And this is clear evidence of what their plan is.
Okay, well, folks, again, this is for vaccines for children as young as 11. That's taking place in the city of Washington, D.C. Barbara, I'd like to transition, though, to the COVID vaccination. And if you could begin by maybe helping us understand this COVID vaccine, what is this mRNA, messenger RNA? Does this rewrite one's genetic code? What exactly is this? Help us understand it.
It's pretty complicated. We have traditionally, vaccines have been either live virus vaccines that have been attenuated to be less, not be able to give you the type of disease that you get if you get it naturally. It's an attenuated live virus, like the live oral polio vaccine we used to use, like the live chickenpox vaccine that children are given, the live nasal influenza vaccine. There are a number of live virus vaccines. And then you have the inactivated bacterial vaccines, usually, but there are also inactivated viral vaccines. And those are inactivated by chemical process or heat or whatever. Okay, these vaccines, the Moderna and the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccines, are made in a completely different way than the vaccines we've used in the past. And so they're kind of known as genetically engineered vaccines. In the mRNA, messenger RNA, is actually a synthetic RNA. Ribonucleic acid, or RNA, is a nucleic acid that is present in all living cells. And its principal role is to act as a messenger carrying instructions from DNA for controlling the synthesis of proteins in your body. It's a very, very important process, okay? And what they've done is they've created a synthetic messenger RNA. And this will basically, it's a new type of vaccine that inserts fragments of viral messenger RNA into human cells. And so your cells are reprogrammed to produce antigens to the SARS-CoV-2 virus, which causes COVID-19 vaccines. And they hope that then when you're challenged by the natural SARS-CoV-2 virus, that you will have your body will then resist, okay, and you won't get sick. Mm-hmm. And we need to understand that these messenger RNA vaccines, they've tried for many, many years to get these vaccines licensed. They could not do it because they had severe reactions attached to them. They had death, autoimmune reactions, etc. Now, they say that they've changed the messenger RNA that they used to use in these older vaccines they were trying to get licensed, and these are much safer. However, we are seeing, with the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, we are seeing very high reactivity. Now, they're saying, the government is saying, and the companies are saying, well, you know, when you have chills and high fever and severe fatigue, so severe you can't get out of bed, muscle aches, joint aches, you know, you just feel like you have a really bad case of the flu, basically, influenza, that this means that the vaccine is working. I mean, literally 50 to 75% of people who get these vaccines are having these types of very strong reactions. Hmm. Now, I remember with DPT vaccine, the whole cell pertussis vaccine that used to be used in this country with infants and children, was one of the most highly reactive vaccines we've ever used. It caused the same types of very strong fevers, local reactions, chills, you know, body aches, headache, etc. You know, that vaccine had a very high reactivity rate and also seizures, brain injury, brain damage, death. One of the things we've been following is the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System that is operated by the federal government, which was actually part of that 1986 National Childhood Vaccine and Injury Act. There's a lot of sudden deaths being reported. Mm-hmm. Now, the government says, and the companies say, that the deaths are not related to these vaccines.
You know,
however, these deaths are occurring quite quickly after the vaccination.
We're going to take a break right here, Barbara. And when we come back, I'm going to read directly from the Centers for Disease Control. Just downloaded a report in which they talk about this very aspect here. They talk about the number of deaths reported since people received COVID-19, but saying, well, you know, there's nothing to link the vaccine with the death that has taken place. So I want you to hear directly from the CDC what they're saying on it, and then we're going to have Barbara comment on it. So stay with us, friends. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, author and seminar speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, what's involved in being created in the image of God?
Chris, being in the image of God is more than just being a two-legged, two-armed creature. There's some sense in which God uses a human form to express his own nature, like the arm of the Lord, but God does not have a physical body. I suspect that the image of God deals with our spiritual nature, our appreciation for beauty and ability to love, and our ability to love and reject God, and of course, our eternal soul. A recent research project identified perhaps another aspect. It was shown that those people who love others and provide emotional support for others live longer themselves. These are godly qualities, and maybe that's part of being the image of God. If we live like that, it's beneficial. You see, Chris, even the way we act, it all goes back to Genesis.
Thanks, Dr. Morris. For more on creation, visit our website at www.icr.org.
Vaccine issues are our topic today. Barbara Lowe Fisher is our guest. She is president of the National Vaccine Information Center. Their website, nvic.org, nvic.org. And ladies and gentlemen, just within the last hour, I went to the CDC website, and they have a page that is called Selected Adverse Events Reported After COVID-19. And I'd like to quote directly from this document. They've got many different things on their site, but I'm going to quote just from a few paragraphs. It says, what you need to know, COVID-19 vaccines are safe and effective. They have that in bold. Millions of people in the United States have received COVID-19 vaccines, and those vaccines will undergo the most intensive safety monitoring in U.S. history. CDC recommends you get a COVID-19 vaccine as soon as you're eligible. Adverse events described on this page have been reported to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, that's VAERS. VAERS accepts reports of any adverse effect following vaccination, even if it does not, clear that the vaccine caused the problem. CDC, FDA, and other federal partners will continue to monitor the safety of all COVID-19 vaccines. They go on, they talk about anaphylaxis, and then I just want to get to the part here dealing with reports of death after COVID-19 vaccination. It says this, over 92 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines were administered in the United States from December 14th, 2020 through March 8th, 2021. During this time, VAERS received 1,637 reports of death, that's 0.0018%, among people who received a COVID-19 vaccine. CDC and FDA physicians review each case report of death as soon as notified, and CDC requests medical records to further access reports. A review of available clinical information, including death certificates, autopsy, and medical records, revealed no evidence that vaccination contributed to patient deaths. CDC and FDA will continue to investigate reports of adverse events, including deaths reported to VAERS. Your response, Barbara?
Well, I think that what we have to all remember is that these are still experimental vaccines. They have not been officially licensed by the Food and Drug Administration. They are being distributed under an emergency use authorization, which allows experimental vaccines to be used in the public. There's a lot that is not known about the biological mechanisms of how vaccines can cause injury and death separate from these mRNA experimental vaccines. That the Institute of Medicine repeatedly over a course of 20 years said that there haven't been enough studies done to really determine why vaccines cause death and injury in some people. They know that for genetic reasons, environmental, epigenetic reasons, that some people are more susceptible to having a bad course after a vaccination. I find it very disingenuous to assume that all death or injury that occurs after these experimental COVID vaccines are absolutely not connected. When these are new vaccines. They've only been studied really for about 9 months before they were put on the market. So to assume that there is no cause and effect, for example, there was a woman in Virginia who died within an hour of receiving a COVID-19 vaccine. And when she was brought to the emergency room, the personnel said she suffered a flash pulmonary edema, which is a condition caused by excess fluid in the lungs, caused by a serious allergic reaction or anaphylaxis to the vaccine she received. And yet the state of Virginia refused to do an autopsy, refused to really look at her body and what had occurred, if they could find any evidence. And it was just written off. And so when you just assume that there is no causation, you're never going to really scientifically evaluate why some people are having a hard time with this vaccine, or indeed any vaccine. They just refuse to do the research.
Yeah, and so they insist that we review each case, we look at medical records, we look at, you know, each case here, and they said including death certificates, the autopsy and medical records revealed no evidence. So do we assume by this that every person who dies following a COVID is actually receiving an autopsy? Or what I hear you saying is that there's not really that follow-through that's taken place.
I don't know. I know in this one case it was well reported that the family wanted an autopsy and she was not given an autopsy. I mean, there are a number of other deaths that have been reported and not in just not in elderly people. You know, it's very easy to write off a death following vaccination in a person over 65 or a person in a nursing home as, oh, they died of something else. And yet with COVID-19, when somebody tests positive, even though they may have underlying conditions, it is automatically categorized as a COVID-19 death. So there's not equal treatment here of death and injury following vaccination and when you test positive for COVID-19.
March 3rd, 2021, LifeSiteNews.com. Here's a headline. Healthy 28-year-old mom dies suddenly following second Pfizer shot. 28
Correct.
Years old. I mean, and again, it's... you know, what is the connection? As of right now, they're saying there is no connection to it. But we're seeing that there have been those even in the medical profession who have taken the vaccine, who have all of a sudden gone into a medical emergency, and some death has occurred there too.
Yes, there have been a number of healthcare workers. So I was taking a look at the VAERS data today through MedAlerts at MedAlerts.org, which you also can access through NVIC.org. But there were, as of February 26, over 25,000 adverse events reported to VAERS following COVID-19 vaccines. And people need to remember that one 2011 study that was funded by the CDC found that less than 1% of adverse events are actually reported to VAERS. So we have a very low reporting rate. So about 25,000 so far, and as you pointed out, 1,600 deaths, and about 4,425 cases were considered serious. The healthcare provider recorded it as a serious event. So we're going to know more as more vaccines are given. We have a new vaccine, Johnson & Johnson, that has just been given a emergency use authorization. This is not an mRNA vaccine. It is a adenovirus vectored vaccine. Mm-hmm. Adenovirus is a kind of like an ordinary cold virus. And that vaccine is just starting to be given, and it's a one-dose vaccine versus the two doses that you have to get if you use Moderna or Pfizer, the mRNA vaccine.
And I understand they're using this Johnson & Johnson right now. They're testing it on infants, on pregnant women, and even people with compromised immune systems?
Yes. They just got an EUA for it, but they're now proceeding immediately to try to get what they want, clearly, is a license to give this COVID-19 vaccine to newborn infants, pregnant women, and people with compromised immune systems. So that those clinical trials are now taking place. I understand that at least one health official here in the U.S. has said that the children, the high school students, by the end of the year, we'll be getting the COVID-19 vaccines and the little children and infants at the beginning of next year. And, of course, once these vaccines are officially licensed by the FDA, then I think you're going to see at least half the states start to try to mandate them for school and daycare.
And we're going to get to the mandates here in just a moment. I'd like you to address one other issue here, and that is this is women who are carrying babies and the vaccination. I saw a story yesterday, WND.com, a story out of Albuquerque, actually, indicating that this was abortion-free New Mexico that released a report on a woman from Michigan at 28 weeks of pregnancy, received her first dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, later delivered a non-viable 29-week-old baby. Her baby had no heartbeat within 3 days of the vaccine. She reported the stillbirth to VAERS, attributing the vaccine to her baby's death. Is this an isolated incident that you know of?
Well, you know, again, just like death following vaccination, and I'm talking any vaccinations,
mm-hmm.
the assumption is, it has been most of the time by doctors and public health officials, that the miscarriage or stillbirth did not have anything to do with the vaccine given to a pregnant woman. So there's always this assumption that there is no causation. But can they prove that? They can't really prove that that baby was not affected in some way by the vaccine that the mother was given.
Barbara Lowe Fisher, our guest here today on Crosstalk. This very afternoon, here in the state of Wisconsin, there's a committee meeting in Madison, our state capital, on legislation that would forbid a government agency, and you've got this posted on your NVIC advocacy, forbid a government agency from mandating the COVID vaccine, and then there's another bill that would forbid an employer from being able to mandate the COVID vaccine. Now, that takes us to a whole new discussion, Barbara, because I've heard from individuals who, and I've seen stories that are coming out during various media where it was saying people are losing their jobs because their employer is mandating this vaccine. Can a government, can an employer mandate this emergency use mm-hmm. vaccine?
Well, they're not. As I said, these are experimental vaccines. It is illegal to require a person to get an experimental vaccine. Even if you're in the military, you have to have a licensed vaccine. So the website of the FDA under the emergency use authorization explanation says, quote, let me see if I can get it right here, says, quote, that you have to allow people to have voluntary informed consent. You cannot require the vaccine until it is licensed. So it's not legal. I mean, you'd have a case if you wanted to go.
So people can say, well, oh, yeah.
There was an article of a waitress in Brooklyn who was fired from her job when she told her supervisor that she was planning to get pregnant and she did not want to get the experimental COVID-19 vaccine after the restaurant had said, you either take the vaccine or you can't work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just not right. The city of Charlottesville has issued to all the employees that work for the city saying they have to get the COVID vaccine. You know, this is not, again, this is overreach.
So you're saying, according to law, you know, and FDA guidance and everything else, and I saw a press release come out from Liberty Council, you cannot mandate an emergency use vaccine, correct?
No, you cannot. On the website of the FDA, it says, quote, recipients must, quote, have the option to accept or refuse the vaccine. That's because it's experimental.
Barbara Lowe Fisher, our guest here today on Crosstalk. A quick break, and we're going to cover one other topic, and then we'll open phone lines, and that's the topic of vaccination passports, because there's a discussion going on. Will such a passport be needed for transportation purposes or to attend a sports venue, a concert? What's going on with this vaccination passport matter? So we'll cover that after the break, and then we'll be opening some phone lines here as well. So be ready to formulate your questions to ask of our guest today. By the way, you can check out their website, NVIC.org. Stands for National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC.org, or NVICAdvocacy.org, where you can stay informed as to what's happening in your state. Back in a minute. This is Crosstalk.
Attacks continue against the Bible. Some accuse the Bible of not being historically accurate. Some insist it's a book written by man filled with error. But did you know that archaeology continues to confirm what's written in Scripture? In the fully illustrated hardcover book, Evidence for the Bible, you are introduced to the world of biblical archaeology. Using full-color pictures and an easily read format, you will see that what has been dug up from the earth confirms the places and events from Scripture. Rulers and kings are documented. Battles and their outcomes are confirmed. And details of prophetic utterances are precisely what are known to have happened. This book takes you on a fascinating journey during which the traveler never knows what may turn up with the next trial. It's hard to put this book down as one captivating page leads to another. Evidence for the Bible is available for a donation of $30. Call VCY America at 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America, and during the break, I just saw another story here, Barbara, we really need to cover, and that is the warning that's gone out from religious groups regarding the Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine, talking about it's being linked to cells from aborted babies. That's another issue as well.
Yes, and that is true. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine did use abortive fetal cell lines to create that vaccine. I know that there is been a lot of discussion among certain Catholic bishops who mm-hmm. are very opposed to the use of that vaccine for that reason. And I think that it's becoming more and more an issue, the use of aborted fetal cell lines to make vaccines, and Johnson & Johnson is right in the crosshairs of that right now.
So we also hear a lot about this vaccination passport. There are some that are pushing for this discussion about passports needed for transportation purposes or to attend some kind of venue that you're going to have to show this barcode on your phone or something like that. What's going on with this issue?
Yeah, I think a good example is Israel. Israel has something that they call a green pass. And it's a vaccination certificate in digital and paper form. It's available to anyone who has received two doses of the COVID-19 vaccines. People who have recovered from the disease, from the virus, and have naturally acquired immunity, but have not been vaccinated, don't get a pass. So you have to be vaccinated. It allows you to go into shops and malls, museums, hotels, gyms, theaters, you know, play in restaurants and bars, but you still, right now anyway, you still have to wear a mask and social distance, even though you've got this pass. I guess the reason I wanted to bring up Israel is that they're instituting it already. They're already mm-hmm. issuing this green pass. Now, the aviation industry in the last few days came out with a press release, major aviation, travel, and aerospace groups, that urged the current administration here to establish COVID-19 health credentials to help boost travel on public transportation. Now, there's an app that, you know, a lot of these big tech companies are developing apps that you would, on your cell phone, you could have this information about your vaccination status. Right? Or your testing status. Say the companies, the airlines decide that you have to show proof that you are COVID negative before you can get on the plane, or you have to show proof of vaccination. The thing that I really was encouraged by was in this press release, the companies said that they were not advocating mandatory vaccination. That the COVID-19 vaccine should not be a requirement for domestic or international travel. But I'm suspicious, because why then are they asking for there to be some sort of a standard to show whether you've been tested or you've been vaccinated? I mean, to me, they're talking out of both sides of their mouth there.
Yeah, yeah. And we also have the World Health Organization involved in this, and the United Nations as well. And
well, yes, there is the powers that be want to have everyone be vaccinated and also show proof that they've been vaccinated. It's really the first step in a global electronic tracking system. So that your personal medical, this is personal medical information, whether you've had COVID-19 or not and recovered from it, or whether you've been vaccinated, that's personal medical information. And they're trying to make it so that everybody's got to divulge that. Well, that's just the first step. to all kinds of, I mean, talk about a slippery slope.
Yeah.
Well, friend, what other information are they going to put into that little tracking system?
No doubt, folks, you got questions, and our phone lines are open here at 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. And again, it's the perspective here through the program that the decisions are up to each individual, Barbara. You're not telling people whether they should or should not, correct?
No, never have. Our organization defends the ethical principle of informed consent to medical risk-taking, which includes use of pharmaceutical products like vaccines. You have the right to have full information and make an informed and voluntary decision for yourself or your minor child, which is why we're so concerned about this bill in D.C. that is going to be a model for other states where the parent has no power in terms of what vaccines children are given.
Our lines are already packed out, so we'll take your calls. As soon as you hear somebody hang up, that's your opportunity to get in as well. We're going to begin in Toledo, Oregon, and Daryl is calling. You're on the air, Daryl.
Yeah, hi. Somebody told me that the material in those vaccines was taken from the fetuses, stem cells from aborted fetuses. Is that true?
Yes, there are two things that they use aborted fetal cells for. One is for manufacture of the vaccine, but other is testing of the vaccines. So this is why this has become, it's not just the COVID, the Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine. There are other vaccines that have used aborted fetal cells for production, including the MMR vaccine, measles, mumps, rubella, the chickenpox vaccine, the hepatitis A vaccine. So you really, if you want to know the information about ingredients, and you really need to look at the product manufacturer insert. And we have all those available on mbic.org.
Great. Thank you for the call. Next to Beth in West Dallas. You're on the air, Beth.
Yes. I just wanted to mention on NBIC, I get the alert regarding vaccination updates. And it stated about Tennessee being one of the highest vaccinated states, as well as now one of the highest infection rates of COVID. I wanted to know if your guests would speak about the shedding of these vaccines. And the other comment I wanted to make is that I just see with the shedding and giving people these vaccines, it's like never-ending sickness and never-ending vaccines.
Hmm. Thank you, Beth.
Well, the vaccines, the shedding refers to live virus vaccines, like the oral polio vaccine, which we don't use here anymore. When we did use it, you could get vaccine-strain polio from the shedding of this attenuated polio virus. If you came in contact with someone who'd been recently vaccinated, your child who had been vaccinated could get vaccine-strain polio, or you could get it if you came in contact with the child's bodily fluids and you were not immune. This vaccine, the oral polio vaccine, is used around the world still and is causing vaccine-strain polio paralysis. Okay, so you can get vaccine-strain chickenpox, the varicella zoster virus, also from someone who has been recently vaccinated. These mRNA COVID-19 vaccines and the Johnson & Johnson adenovirus vectored vaccine, they are not live virus vaccines. They do not shed the SARS-CoV-2 virus. They're not made in the same way as live virus vaccines.
Now, she also talked about Tennessee with a high incidence of
I'm not sure what she's referring to. I don't have any. To my knowledge, didn't put anything out. She may be confusing us with another organization, but I don't know what she's referring to.
Okay, let's go to Terry next. Hi, Terry, you're on the air.
Yes, what can you tell us about the swabbing test to determine if you have COVID? My mother has to get one because she has to have a swallow test, and do the swallow test, you've got to be COVID-free. And when we go in, we have the option of swabbing our nose with a chemical, with one that will give us the result in an hour or two, and the other one in a day. Are those swabs blank? Do they have something on it? And should be concerned, even if you're going to do it yourself?
Well, there has been a lot of controversy about both the tests to find out if lab tests to find out if you are currently infected with SARS-CoV-2, or the tests that are supposed to confirm or whether or not you have recovered from the infection. In both instances, these tests have been shown to be highly unreliable, and there has been some altering of the test to confirm whether or not you've had COVID-19 vaccine. It's a very unreliable, and unfortunately, you don't really know when you get your results back whether or not they're accurate. I mean, I've known people who have had constant testing, and they've gone back and forth with being negative and being positive. So when you get a test...
Is there any danger to you doing the swab yourself with either one of these test methods, regardless if it's reliable or not?
Not to my knowledge, there is no risk to you in doing the testing. You just have to know that when you do get tested, you are entered into a electronic system. In other words, you're in the system.
Yeah, but in order to get any kind of medical procedure done, you have to go through the test in order to have the procedure.
If she's 96, she's not going to have the COVID vaccine right now. She's going to wait a while, but she's got to go for a swallow test for something else. And because her mask will have to be off
for
the swallow test,
swab test.
You got to make sure she's not.
And like
not
I say,
current.
It takes a snapshot of that day.
Mm-hmm.
She's not infected, or she, you know, that day.
Yeah.
But you don't know what's going to happen in the following days or weeks. It depends upon the environment she lives in. Whether or not, you know, this is what I've always scratched my head about, is that it's only a snapshot of that day, whether you're infected or not.
So we should have to follow through with the test, but as Barbara said, that there's not a risk to her being tested, Terry.
Not to my knowledge.
Other than being in a database and it'll either show yes or no, you have it or not. Okay.
Yeah.
For that day.
Great. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Terry. Karen in Oregon, you're on the air.
Hi. I just think it's so ironic and even hypocritical for Johnson & Johnson, who's known for their baby care products, baby bath, all this, to now just to make a buck using aborted baby cells, and that's all I have to say.
Thank you for the comment. Lewis is next. You're on the air, Lewis.
Hello. So my question is, I got actually two questions. So is that vaccine is a, you know, a safe vaccine to take? And the other question is, I heard that vaccine is just, you know, like has like mark of the beast on it, and so, and they can track you and stuff like that. Is that true?
Okay. Is the vaccine safe, and is there any tracking mechanism within the vaccine itself that you're aware of?
Well, you know, the question of is the vaccine safe? Again, it's still an experimental. These vaccines are still experimental. And when you consider, is a vaccine safe, you have to think about individuality. On a population base, it may be safe for many people, but it may not be safe for you. Because we're all different. We all react differently to prescription drugs and vaccines and foods and all kinds of challenges that we meet in our environment.
Mm-hmm.
But with vaccination, depending upon your genetics, your epigenetic history, your environment, your medical history, you may be more or less susceptible to having a reaction
to
vaccination.
Like,
and the problem is they haven't done the research to really precisely understand who's at risk. And that's especially true for these vaccines that are still experimental. So that's that question. And the other question was... What was the other one?
It was the tracking mechanism, but we're up against a break, so we'll have to come back here in just a moment. And just to point out again from the CDC, they said that there's been 92 million doses and of 1,637 reported deaths, but they're saying no link between the two, and that's partly being, you know, questioned, how do they know that? And then also the other adverse effects as well. So what about the tracking? We'll cover that after the break. This is Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Recently, I was listening to a medical doctor being interviewed about the COVID vaccination. And this person interviewing this medical doctor said plainly, I'm not a Christian. But the medical doctor was very obvious. And the medical doctor began to talk about how when you have to get a card or a mark or some kind of certification to buy something, to go into a store, to get on an airplane, that it's setting up the mark of the beast. Well, the person that was interviewing her, again, she said she's not a Christian. But here's what she said that stunned me. She said, why is it I'm having to tell the Christians not to be a part of this? Why am I having to tell the Christians, as a non-Christian, tell the Christians this is setting up the mark of the beast? Why are Christians doing this? You know what the Bible says, Christians? Come out and have nothing to do with this. It's sad when the unsaved world knows we're not doing our job.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Barbara Lowe Fisher is our guest today. She is president of the National Vaccine Information Center. Their website, nvic.org. And also to find out legislatively what's going on in your state, nvicadvocacy.org. Barbara, just before the break, that caller had a second question. It had to do, are you aware of any tracking mechanism within these various vaccines that have come out of any sort?
Oh, well, there's no question. There are state tracking systems for vaccination, and the federal government is coordinating the hooking up of all the state systems into a federal system, but particularly with this vaccine. You have to assume that when you get vaccinated, you will be in that tracking system, or when you get tested
Faith is our next caller from Milwaukee. You're on the air.
Hello. I am calling to ask a question about medical exemptions and religious exemptions.
Mm-hmm.
In both cases, the importance of talking to our doctors and having them with us. Because recently I had a friend who was applying for a nursing job, and there was a mandatory flu vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
And she, in her history at birth, through those initial vaccinations as a child, she had terrible adverse reactions, and she went to them and said, I want to file a medical exemption.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said that you have to have a test. We checked her for her chickenpox, if she had antibodies.
Okay. Tell you what, so we don't go too far down the trail, let me ask Barbara about this aspect of medical exemptions and conscience exemptions. There's also religious exemptions.
Yes. I mean, it depends upon, for children entering school, it's a state-by-state issue. You'd have to know the law in your state for whether your state allows a religious or conscientious belief exemption in addition to the medical. But the medical is almost impossible to get because they've narrowed down contraindications to almost nothing. So almost nothing qualifies as a medical contraindication to vaccination. That's where her friend may be having trouble. The religious exemption is a very important exemption, and it is actually protected under some federal guidelines. But the unions, really, the healthcare workers need to talk to their unions, because it's the unions who can file the lawsuits and can advocate on behalf of the healthcare worker. It's very hard as an individual healthcare worker to go up against the system. So I'm encouraging people to talk to their unions to see if they can protect them, mm-hmm. especially for the religious and medical exemption.
Thank you for the call here, Faith. And Barbara, I think I've seen on your website a map of the U.S. with the states that show what state has what kind of exemption.
Right. This is for the school entry. So if you go on our website and you look at our state laws, you'll see a map there that shows you which exemptions your state allows. And then when you click on, you can then get the laws, the actual law from your state, so that you can understand what law is governing you.
Our next call is from Sheldon, Missouri. Ed, thanks for calling Crosstalk. You're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to know, it sounds to me like that when they get these vaccines okay, certified, whatever the terminology is, are they going to force that on little kids, like in these bulk vaccines that they give now?
That's the plan. The plan is to license these, to test and license these vaccines and give them to infants and children. Once the FDA licenses them for infants and children, I expect that you will see at least half the states try to mandate them for school entry and daycare entry.
Thank you, Ed. Holly is next. You're on the air, Holly.
Hi. I'm a longtime supporter of you and your work there at NVIC and beyond, Barbara. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And God bless you for all you do. I look at the VAERS data a lot, and it seems that the reports are generally pretty quick after the vaccines come, you know, are received, and a lot of them being right now with this one, cardiac-related. I was wondering, do you think, is there going to be an issue catching things like ADE or pathogenic priming when these people are exposed to the wild virus after being vaccinated?
I'm very concerned about that, and I'm not the only one. There are scientists and physicians who are concerned about the fact that the clinical trials did not include people who had already recovered from COVID-19, who they should have had those people in there and identified them, because there is a question about this enhancement issue where you either have recovered from the disease and you get vaccinated, or you get vaccinated and then you contract the disease, and whether there's going to be a worse outcome. This is an open question, and it's going to be interesting to see how they answer it.
Thank you, Holly.
Thank you.
We've got Jose next, holding the longest. Jose, you're on the air.
Hi. My question was, it amazes me how Israel has embraced this experimental COVID vax and these passports, especially since during the Holocaust, they were experimented on by Nazi doctors. So with that, my question is, how does the Nuremberg Code come into play for the rest of us, which came out of that tragedy?
Well, you're touching on a very something a lot of people are talking about, because the Nuremberg Code indeed was the informed consent ethic that prevails in the modern practice of medicine, really was given birth at the Nuremberg Tribunal, at the Nuremberg trials. And, you know, the doctors who were charged with crimes against humanity for experimenting on captive people, their main defense was they were just following orders. They were just doing what the government told them to do. And this brings up to me a very interesting question. You know, when are we in our country going to draw a line and say that nobody should force anybody else to put their life on the line for a medical product or a medical procedure without their voluntary informed consent? Informed consent means you have the right to have full information about the benefits and risks of a medical intervention and be able to make a voluntary decision without being coerced or threatened or punished by anyone. This is a basic human right. And this is where we're, as a society, going to have to make a decision when these vaccines are licensed, whether or not we are going to be enslaved, basically, in a medical-type tyranny where we're forced to take products that we don't want to take. It's one thing to voluntarily take it. I think these vaccines, you know, anyone who wants to be vaccinated should have availability and not have to, free availability.
We're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time. Barbara Lowe Fisher, our guest here today, NVIC.org is the website. Thank you, Barbara.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.